il corner dentro, il colpo di testa, Zapata, Zapata, dovrebbe essere gol, è gol, Zapata, lo dice la Goal Line Technology, al 97esimo, il Milan trova il 2-2, impazzisce la curva sud.
Hello and welcome to the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm glad to be back after the long summer here. I'm your host, Anthony Torgrud. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. Normally we have Oliver Fisher with us, but today he was unable to make it, so we have a special guest filling in. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yep, my name is Madison Darian Toth. I am from Detroit, Michigan, and you can follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
All right, so Madison is actually one of our writers on the website here at SempreMilan.com. Glad to have him on board, something we've been wanting to get done for a while, so looking forward to this episode. It might be a bit lengthy. We do have a lot to cover, as we obviously haven't had an episode in quite some time here. But first things first, we'll dive right in with the summer. Quite a lot changed over the summer. Initial thoughts?
With the beginning of the summer, you know, we weren't sure what was going to happen in the transfer market between financial fair play kind of coming down on us and UEFA banning us from Europe. You know, players don't really want to come to a club with that stigma, but with Young Hung losing the club and really Elliott management coming in and kind of just bossing up, you know, they went to the court of arbitration of sport and just kind of, you know, cleared all debts of the club. And it was a pretty exciting summer from the get-go all the way until the end of the transfer market.
Yeah, I mean, a lot happened really quick there. Like you said, when we were banned from Europe, it seemed like almost an all-time low for us. You know, we weren't expecting to get anyone coming in. We were expecting to lose a lot of big names and just kind of have another dull season ahead. And it's kind of ironic how when Young Hung first took over, the idea of them not being able to pay that debt back to Elliott and the club going to the Elliott Fund was kind of like the worst-case scenario for us. And then fast forward to the summer, and now they're the heroes. They saved the day for us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, everyone was disappointed that we didn't qualify for Champions League this season. But with the way everything turned out, it kind of seems like it was a blessing in disguise because now Young Hung is gone. And it seemed like he was never really financially stable to have control over a club like AC Milan.
Yeah, I mean, and no one could prove where his money came from. The few times that there was any record of where it was, it got shut down as, you know, either a front or a closed down mine company that wasn't even technically owned by him. A lot of shady stuff was going on there, and they just kept going to that fallback that the Western world doesn't understand how Chinese politics and finances work. And to be fair, that's probably true. I'd say the good majority of us don't, but at the end of the day, He was a fraud, and now we're owned by the Elliott Fund, and it's they did a lot. They brought in Leonardo right at the beginning. They brought in Paolo Maldini. I mean, that alone is just a huge boost for the players to have not just an icon of the club, but an icon of the sport. One of the arguably the greatest defender of all time is now there with you every single day in practice, in your meetings, everything. I mean, that's a huge boost.
Absolutely, and Paolo Maldini, I mean, he was rumored to be coming in under the last ownership, and I don't know if he just smelled their bullshit or what, but he didn't. He said that they didn't contact him to come in, but he also said that Elliott management didn't contact him, so I think he's just playing it off, you know, trying not to have. He seems like he likes to keep everything low-key and to not, you know, be in the media as much as he can.
Yeah, I completely agree. And real quick, kind of to jump ahead here, and then we'll go back to it. But one of the things I saw interesting from this past weekend was when the team got to Malpensa Airport to get on the plane to Napoli, most of the photographers and the fans were taking pictures with Maldini and with Leonardo and just letting the players walk by. And that's, you know, that's obviously a total turnaround. But just goes to show the gravity of having a figure like that at the club. Even if he's inexperienced in the role, he's still... It carries so much weight, and they went straight to work right from the get go. I mean, we had Bonucci, our former captain, leave us, and somehow that still turned into a victory for us. We got Higuain and Caldara from Juventus. I mean, Higuain's one of the best strikers on planet Earth. Caldara, one of the most promising You could look back at my Twitter history, and I've been kind of rooting this kid on for quite a while here. And I think I even said during the World Cup that next World Cup it's going to be Romagnoli and Caldara leading the front for Italy. So glad to see that worked out for us. And then who else did we bring in after that? We brought in like 8 players this summer. It was pretty heavy load.
Yeah, we brought in Alan Halovic, I believe. I definitely just butchered his name for free. And then the very last day, we brought in a couple of guys as well.
Yeah, we got Samu Castillejo. I'm going to butcher where he came from. It's been a while since we've done one of these guys, so I apologize. he came in from either Villarreal or... No, it was... yeah, it was Villarreal. That's where he came in from. We got him, and then, like you said, Halilovic, which was the free. I think that was the last official signing of the old regime. And then we took over with that, and we got in Bakayoko on loan with option to buy from Chelsea. We got Strinic on a free. We had, obviously, Caldara. We had Pepe Reina on a free. And there was obviously other ones that are slipping my mind right now. Let's see. We got Higuain, Castillejo, Halilovic. Oh, Diego Laxalt was one of them. Bakayoko, Strinic, and Caldara, and Reina. So, yeah, there's all 8 right there. And they're all upgrades from where we came from before. You know, you look at Reina, who's going to be our backup goalkeeper, but he was Napoli's starting keeper before, and he's obviously a lot better than Storari and Antonio Donnarumma. Caldara is going to be a better backup to Gustavo Gomez, who left. Strinic is a better backup to Antonelli, who left. Bakayoko, we didn't have anyone to back up really for Biglia, unless you want to count Montolivo.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone that came in was an improvement. So all around, I think it was a great transfer window for us, and the majority of it happened in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was definitely very exciting. And to touch on Pepe Reina, I mean, he left Napoli, second place teams, got 90 points last season in the league. No second place team in any of the other top 5 leagues finished as high as Napoli did. So that's just saying something right there. And I deep down believe that he wants to help Donnarumma grow as a goalie. And not only that, I mean, imagine being a 19-year-old kid playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, playing almost 3 games a week. You know, he kind of had a slump towards the end of the season last season. A lot of the fans were getting on his back, and he had to just be mentally and physically exhausted. And so now with Pepe Reina in, hopefully he plays in the Coppa Italia and Europa League to kind of give Donnarumma just to concentrate on the league play.
Yeah, and that's something that Gattuso had mentioned earlier this week, was that one of the goalkeepers was going to play one competition, the other was going to play the other two.
Yep.
Obviously, he didn't give specifics, but like you said, it's pretty straightforward. It's going to be Donnarumma in the league, Pepe Reina in Europa League as well as the Cup. And honestly, that doesn't worry me one bit. You know, previous seasons, given our goalkeeping depth, I was always afraid when it was those side competitions who was going to start it, whether it be Antonio Donnarumma, Storari, Abbiati, you know, anyone who was kind of over the hill or just not good enough. And now I feel secure. If Donnarumma were to get a long-term injury, hopefully, obviously, he doesn't, but I still wouldn't feel like we made any major downgrade having Pepe Reina step in the ring. So,
absolutely.
That signing is so understated by the fans.
Yeah, and I mean, Antonio Donnarumma is not the best goalie, but don't forget about his game against Inter last season when he just had save after save to keep us in that game to knock them out of Coppa Italia. Like, that was amazing goalkeeping for his first start as a Milan player, getting signed from a Serie B team, you know, to come up. Unbelievable.
Right, and you know, more props to him on that. That wasn't just a game. That was a 120-minute long game, and he kept a clean sheet. Both games that Antonio Donnarumma played last season were actually clean sheets. So, you know, he's got a claim in his own right. Obviously, he's not going to be a Pepe Reina or a Gianluigi Donnarumma, but he is absolutely incredible for the older brother of the Donnarummas there. Definitely fantastic in his own right there.
Yeah.
Another player. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No.
What I was going to say is another player we brought in was Bakayoko, who was an animal when he was at Monaco. Had a poor season at Chelsea last year. We brought him in. What are your thoughts on him?
I was pretty excited. Someone for either Kisei to play with, because Biglia has been constantly injured since he joined last summer, or someone to kind of come in the 60th minute and just take control of the midfield. And I really did not see him play much when he was at Monaco. I don't really watch much of the French league. But for his size, I was very excited. Kind of disappointed by the way, or from how he played against Napoli. He looked a little bit lost. But I mean, first game against a great team, kind of got to give him some wiggle room. So, but hopefully he cleans up his act a little bit and finds his feet so he can settle that ball a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I do have some good friends that are big Chelsea fans, and I watch a lot of Chelsea games with them, and they were really excited when they signed him, but as the season progressed, you know, he just wasn't performing what they expected. But like you said, I feel like he could really fit into our team in Serie A, and during the first Napoli game, it didn't seem like he did it too well. Mm-hmm. He didn't start off terrible when he fit in for Biglia, just a straight swap, but I think towards the later stages of that game, and I could be wrong here, but I think we switched to kind of like a 4-2-3-1. And that double pivot between Bakayoko and Kessié just wasn't really working out too well, and they both looked pretty poor.
I definitely agree. Could not agree more.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that game then, actually. We finished 3-2. We lost, but we started up two goals to none, and I think it was like the 60th minute was when Napoli finally got their first goal, or right around that area. Talk us through that first goal for Bonaventura.
Amazing. I mean, just beautiful. I started screaming. I was alone in my entire house. I started running around. When I watched the replay, it was even more amazing. It looked like he hit it on the side of his ankle and just put a beautiful curve on that ball. I couldn't have asked for a better way to start the season for Bonaventura, who just, he seems to have ups and downs, but he always seems to come in at that clutch moment. And Borini with that beautiful assist, like backwards header, and that just, you know, it set the stage for how the team wanted to play this season, and hopefully they can continue to play that way.
Yeah, I mean, I had the exact same reaction. I had a group of friends over for it. We were all watching, and when that went in, we all screamed. We were jumping off the couch, you know, just celebrating. It was an incredible goal, especially with all the heat that Borini received this week from fans thinking he shouldn't be starting. And then to pull out, like you said, that incredible assist. You know, it was, I don't remember who passed it to him. I think it might have been Biglia, but it just hit him perfectly on the head, and you just shot it back down, and off the volley, Bonaventura jumped in, like you said. I think it was like an outside of the ankle shot and just curved in wildly, and yeah, there was no saving that. That was such a cool goal. It was. I watched it again this morning, actually. I mean, I'm obsessed with that goal. That was incredible.
It was unbelievable, to say the least.
And then right after that, we went into halftime at 1-0, and coming out of the halftime, I believe it was the 49th minute, was when our guy Calabria got the next goal. He scored that one. It was Suso with the assist, but that play actually began with Borini as well. He was the one who crossed the pass across the field there from left to right. It landed with Suso. He was able to run up a little bit, cut back, pass it down to Calabria and just slot it right between the defender's legs and into the net. Reminded me a lot of his goal against Roma last season.
Yes.
It seemed almost like that game was a carbon copy of how this game was going up until it went a little bad for us. Musacchio, in my opinion, was to blame for this first goal that we conceded this season. What were your thoughts?
I'll be completely honest. I am a huge praiser of Donnarumma. I will back him and support him until, you know, he either retires or hopefully not leaves us. But I am going to blame him for the poor passing out from the back and just overall poor decision-making with his feet. He looked like he wanted to be Neuer, but he's not, and he needs to know that he can't pass the ball. I mean, he was trying to, you know, pass the ball on a dime between two Napoli defenders multiple times throughout the game. In the first half, I almost had an aneurysm because they were scaring the hell out of me, and we've paid the price. So even though, you know, Mikasio lost the ball. It falls back on Donnarumma for not booting the ball up field. I mean, how many goalies do you see do that? Just having a 2-0 lead, playing the ball out of the back, I just don't understand that.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of agree with you. I think it's a tactic that Gattuso wants is us to play out of the back, but you're right. Donnarumma, his distribution in that short passing out the back, it just hasn't been very good. Mm-hmm. And he passed it to Musacchio, who also made a poor pass to Biglia. Biglia, you know, praise to him, did good work to get past that first defender, but because it was such a poor pass, he was double covered. The other guy got it, passed it back, and Musacchio couldn't cover him then either. And I believe it was Zielinski who scored that goal on us.
Yep.
Zielinski got the equalizer as well, the second one, which, honestly, another goal that you could kind of pin on Donnarumma as well. I don't think Donnarumma had that good of a game. I think it was bad.
Up until the first goal, I think he had an unbelievable game. Minus the passing out of the back, I thought, every time he came out to get the ball, perfectly timed. Every time, like, his saves were just beautiful, in my opinion. I think that the first half of the game, he played fantastic. A lot of the stuff that he was doing, he was making mistakes on last season. And going back to those two goals, he's 6'5". For him to get down on the ground, I believe that those were both far post goals. He curved them far post.
Yeah.
So that's a hard goal to save. Regardless, he's 6'5". He should be able to spring off the ground, get that ball. But, I mean, I disagree. I think that his reflexes were great. He was able to stop a lot of shots.
Yeah, that's fair. He did have a much better first half than the second half. The first goal that was conceded, I believe... No, I'm sorry. The second goal was a near post that I thought he could have saved,
okay.
But he was... I don't know, the way he went down, because it was the lower left-hand corner, and he really could have gotten down quicker. I'm not a goalkeeper, so I don't know the mechanics of it perfectly, but in my opinion, it looked like he kind of jumped down just strange. I feel like he really could have gotten
in there. Yeah, I mean, it looked like he almost just dropped.
Yeah.
Instead of really pushing off the ground, trying to get at that ball.
Yeah.
Regardless, he was fingertips away, but, you know, still...
And I believe on one of the goals, I don't remember which one, he did get a touch on it. It just was either, like you said, fingertips, or just wasn't strong enough of a touch to keep it from going out. It deflected it kind of just to the other side of the post there. But
was that one of the Zielinski goals, or was that the third goal?
I think that was the Zielinski goal off the corner. I believe it was a corner kick. Bakayoko headed it out. He did a good job defending, but it went straight to Zielinski, who just slotted it in.
You're right.
Yeah, it was kind of like a Bakayoko assist, unfortunately. And then
the
third goal, that one, I was just furious, man. I think I even screamed no out loud. It was bad. I was so upset on that one. I mean, that really looked like poor defending just all around, from the midfield to the defenders to the goalkeeper. It just looked like a total shutdown of the team. And I think that's an issue that we've had in the past as well, with the mentality of it, is the first sign of adversity, we just kind of shut off.
Yeah, and to leave a player like Dres Mertens just open, mm-hmm. open on the wing, where 90 out of 100 times he's going to score that goal. And he got the deflection, hit it right in, game over.
Yeah, and it really was. I mean, we had 10 minutes left in the game at that point, but the team just wasn't in it mentally. I think Higuain had a couple decent runs after that 10-minute mark, but... Really, I mean, that's a team that just knows Higuain so well, he was never getting through. They just knew exactly how to neutralize him, and he was the only one that really seemed to want to push for that win, probably because of his mentality coming from Juve, to be honest. You know, they played to the last whistle, and they got wins.
And I definitely think that will help in the future after the team has kind of played with Higuain a little bit more, had a little more practice time, and hopefully he can kind of help lead the younger players into a new Milan. You know, the Milan that me and you grew up with, they were the best team in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like, no one was beating them, and that's how they played, with, you know, Pippo Inzaghi and Shevchenko, just, they were always constantly pushing up, And that's not something that we've had for a while since Zlatan left, you know.
Yeah, really, like you said, since Zlatan left, we haven't had a world-class center forward or striker, and Higuain's it. I mean, this is our guy. Yeah, he's 30 years old. He'll be 31, I believe, in December. But he's one of the best on the planet, and it's a joy to say that we actually have a striker like that. The day we announced it, I bought his jersey. I'm usually not that quick on the jersey purchase, but I did it twice this season, so wallet hurting from that, but... I'm glad we had him, man. He's going to do wonders for us. How many goals do you think he gets this season?
I'm going to say I'll go 24.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say between 20 and 25, so I think you're spot on with that. I'm a little nervous to guess a number so high, but it's Higuain. How could you not? You know, our last season, our best striker had, what, five? Countage had five goals in the season.
I
know Cutrone had like 18 or something, but in all comps.
Okay. I thought Cutrone had 10 because I remember the last few games of the season, he was flirting with 8 and 9, and then I thought against Fiorentina he got a brace. I could be wrong, and I thought that may have led him to 10 because we hadn't had a 10.
I think you're right, actually. Let me look it up. I have Transfer Market up right here. Give me 1 second, I'll get that. Because I think you're right. I think I remember that in the last game there was a big deal about Cutrone needed two goals away from hitting double digits in his first season, and he did get that brace in that game. So I think you are right. Let me pull it up. Yeah, I'm seeing... it's not showing me his goals. Here we go. So it says...
He had 10 goals in 28 appearances. 18 total, though, so you were right on there, which is great for a, 20-year-old first season on the, you know, senior squad?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I mean, he's born in 98. That's pretty crazy. I mean, we have such a young team. You look at Cutrone, 20 years old. You look at Donnarumma, 19 years old. Locatelli just went out on loan, but... Our team extremely young, and that's something that does get spoken about, but not as much as it should as far as our downfalls when we do mess up. We have so many young players. Our captain's 23 years old, the youngest captain since Baresi. I mean, our squad is so young, they're going to make some small mistakes here and there, and it is up to some of the older guys to fix that for us. But some of the older guys, you'll get Ricardo Rodriguez, who's 26 years old. I mean, he's still not old, so it's exciting times are ahead for us, I think.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I mean, 5 years down the line, man, we're going to be hopefully an amazing team.
Yeah, I think in 5 years' time, we should be, you know, two or three seasons into the Champions League. Gattuso hopefully is still there and just I'm doing great. I really do think Gattuso's something special. He obviously was as a player, and going in as a coach, it seems like he's got that mentality. If you look at the second half of last season, would have been third. If only the second half of the season counted, we would have finished third. So hopefully we could continue with that momentum into this season and finish third this year maybe.
Yeah, we only lost two games when he was manager last season in league play?
I think so. It might have been three. I know because we started off kind of weak the first like three or four games, but then we just went on that tear, and really Benevento of all teams was the only team we couldn't beat.
Oh, man. Yeah. But was his first game in charge against Inter in Coppa Italia?
I don't think that was his first game. It was one of the first games. It's been about a year, obviously, so I don't remember it exactly. But it was pretty close. Let me see. Go to matches here. And it's not letting me go that far back. Oh, well. But, yeah, it was right around that Coppa Italia game, I believe, maybe a little before. I know there was a couple in the league, and we lost a silly one in the first game and then a draw in the second game. And I remember thinking, uh-oh, here comes another legend that we're going to tarnish his legacy by management. And then he turned it around and came good. So I think we're going to do good.
Yeah, so how do you feel about Romagnoli being captain?
I love it. I think he's super deserving of it. That's probably one of the biggest pluses about the whole Bonucci snake saga there is he did get to learn a lot from arguably the best defender now in Bonucci, and we saw him grow so much last season. You could say he was even better than Bonucci last season. For him to get the captain's armband and to see how that is, you know, spend so much time with the captain last season, I think he's going to be one of the long-term captains for us, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I really hope so. I remember when he first joined, there was talk of him being a future captain. And if I remember correctly, I thought he downplayed it. He kind of seemed like a quiet guy. Granted, he was 20, 21 years old, but he seems like he's really starting to be a Milan legend, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, he's a banter era legend. You know, since our downfall, he's been one of the few bright lights in it. This is his third season with us now, and so I think you're right, that would made him 20 when he first joined the team. And I remember it was such a big deal that because we didn't have any money that last season with Berlusconi, and Mihailovic really fought to sign him, and we did for like 25 million euros, which at the time was just insane amount of money for us. Other teams were already spending into nine figures, but we weren't quite there. 25 was a huge deal, and we got our boy, you know, bought him from Roma, and never looked back. He's been just such a great player for us. Picked the number 13 because of his idol Nesta. I mean, that speaks enough right there.
Absolutely. So, and I believe that summer Berlusconi actually spent something like $90 million or something.
Yeah.
Because we brought in Baca as well, I believe.
Yeah, that was the last season that Berlusconi actually splashed some cash. It was supposed to be a last leg push to get Champions League. We did not succeed in that, obviously, but we were real close as far as the people we brought in. Okay, so moving forward here, what do you think of the next game we got on Friday against Roma?
I was, after watching our downfall on Saturday, I was extremely nervous. But after watching Roma today going down 3-0 to Atalanta, then, you know, they made the comeback. Roma was home. They're going to be away on Friday, if I believe correctly. And I was actually looking at season tickets for AC Milan the other day on their website. I'm not purchasing one, but just to kind of see what was available out there. And there are very few tickets left. And I don't know how many the club has made available. With the team being such an international club, people, I know they're pretty popular in Asia, and, you know, they're always flying in to go, but hopefully it's going to be a sold-out game, big game. So I believe that if we can take an early lead, we will be able to have that home crowd behind us to hold on.
Yeah, from what I'm reading, it does seem like it's going to be sold out or damn near close to it. We've been doubling our season ticket sales the last couple of years, and that was no different for this season as well. I think we got really close to selling out our season tickets. I don't know exactly how many that is, but the stadium should be damn near packed completely.
Yeah.
And you're right. I was pretty worried because it's Roma. You know, they're a pretty solid team. But like you said, 3-3 against Atalanta today, and not just Atalanta, but like their B team. You know, Atalanta has a hugely important Europa qualifier for them this week that they have to worry about. So they didn't start many, if any, of their starters this game as is. Roma did. You know, they went full force. They want to start off the season, get some points, and they got one out of that, which a game that really they should have got three. That's a good sign for us. You know, that should be the morale boost we need going forward, especially after a disappointing loss in the first week. But from what we're hearing, it sounds like the team had the day off today, and eight of our starting 11 players still showed up to do some training today. So they're hungry. They're ready for it.
And that makes me – I'm sorry for interrupting, but that makes me wonder what kind of effect Paolo Maldini's having on these players. Maybe if – I don't know if he has anything to do with that, but maybe having him around the club is giving players an extra boost of – you know, confidence in wanting to get better.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it makes a huge difference. You know, if he wasn't there, not going to say more people wouldn't have shown up to this, you know, extracurricular practice or not, but I feel like if he wasn't there, less would have been there, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
With a guy like Maldini kind of not even breathing down his neck, because we don't know if he's like an in-your-face kind of figure for the team or not, but just the thought of having a guy like that watching you and that you disappoint, you know, you gotta you really got to step your game up, especially for the defenders. The names of the eight players that showed up aren't released, but you could imagine that Romagnoli was one of them, the captain. And I'm sure he wanted Musacchio there and Caldara, you know, the people that he's going to be pairing up with all season.
Yep.
Obviously needing to do better as well. So they'll be there, I'm sure. The people who struggled, Kessie, Bakayoko, I feel like they're going to be there. Donnarumma, hopefully there. He's had some attitude issues in the past, so I don't know 100%. I would imagine he would be one of them, though. And hopefully going forward, what is your goal prediction for the game? What do you think?
Oh, I will say we go down early, and we come back and win 2-1.
I like it. I like it. I think that's something that we need. We need to face a little adversity and not just give up. We need to fight back from that, and that's the thing we've been lacking for the last 5-6 seasons. And I think Gattuso has been putting that back into us, that winning ways. And I think you're right. I think we're going to come back and pull out either a 2-1 or a 3-1. I think beating them last season, and now we're playing them at home. I just think all the stars are aligning. I think we're going to smash them. I think we're going to do it.
I really hope so. Roma don't look very strong so far in their first two games. I mean, really, there's been no team that has looked dominating besides Juventus, which clearly, I mean, they're always going to be a strong team in the league. But, you know, I mean, Napoli's come back twice from going down. All they need to do is go down one more time and face someone who's going to park the bus, and they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, you look at the table right now, there's three teams that have won both games so far. Juventus, Napoli, and Spal. Spal's not going to continue that. There's just no way. Like you said, Napoli's gone down in both games of the season. They've been shaky. Juventus has been solid. They did go down in their first game against Chievo, but they have Ronaldo. They'll be fine. They'll pull it through. I still predict them to win the league. But as far as our games go, we have a pretty nice stretch of games after this. I mean, tough start with Napoli and Roma, but then the next five games are real easy. Cagliari, Atalanta, Empoli, Sassuolo, and Chievo. Then we go into the Derby. If we could go into that riding a 5 or 6 game winning streak, we might just be unstoppable at that point. I mean, we should be able to beat Inter if everything goes well up to that.
Yeah, I mean, Inter have not looked very strong this season. I did not watch the game this weekend, but I know that they went up 2-0, then dropped two goals as well. But, like, their first game, I remember watching that one, and they just looked like a classic Inter Milan, bringing in some good guys, but they just can't mesh.
Yeah, I mean, they really haven't done well. You're right, though. They brought in so many great players this season. Nainggolan, Vidal and Modric. No, just kidding, though. They won. but they did. They brought in a bunch of good players. Lautaro Martinez, that young striker. And they looked poor. I mean, they had a terrible game. Their best player this season so far has been Asamoah. I mean, that speaks enough right there. Which is another player they brought in. But yeah, they lost to Sassuolo 1-0. And when was that? That was a penalty they lost by. Yep. And then, like you said, they scored two goals against Torino, only to have Torino come back in the 68th with an equalizer and then ride it out. And Inter was someone who I predicted to finish top three. I had them at top two.
Same.
And, you know, fingers crossed that I'm wrong, because they just haven't been too hot. It's about time we get back to our winning ways and they start losing again. It's, you know, props to them for earning Champions League last season. I wouldn't say they deserved it, but they definitely fought and earned it, and hopefully they bottle it this season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So looking forward, after Roma here, like I said, five easy games, Inter, and then we have three more easy games. Well, not easy, but easy-ish games in Sampdoria, Genoa, Udinese. November's when it gets tough again with Juventus and Lazio back-to-back. And then we start the Christmas season, December. It seems like we always have an easy December schedule, and somehow it never goes well for us. But we got Parma, Torino, Bologna, Fiorentina, Frosinone, and Spal all in December. That's a lot of games in December right there.
Yeah, and we have two in January.
We have four in January, actually, if you count the Super Cup and the Coppa Italia.
Oh, you're right. Okay, I'm just looking at league matches.
Yeah. Yeah. January is going to be an interesting month, too. I mean, Super Cup again this season against Juventus. Do you think we could pull it off again?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. It'll be so fun playing Ronaldo, man. I'm excited that he's in the league. I wish he wasn't with Juve, but realistically, that was the only team he could have went for. But I'm excited that he's here.
I'm very excited that he has scored 0 goals in 2 games.
Yeah, me too. I think he got an assist, but he missed a freaking wide open shot this weekend.
He did, and that was incredible. He looked so upset, but then he looked, you know, he celebrated with Mandzukic, but he looked pissed that he didn't get the goal.
And that's something that people have always said about Ronaldo, that he gets mad when his teammates score. And he really did. And I don't think he was mad that it was Mandzukic who got a goal so much as, like, he just missed a sitter. It was bad. Yeah. There was no reason for it. Yeah, that was exciting there. One thing for you and I as USA-based fans that I don't think everyone's going to care about this part, but something I do want to talk about because it's exciting for me. BN Sports no longer has the rights to Serie A. ESPN does now. The model they're using is unique, to say the least. They're using ESPN Plus. It's a new streaming service that they're bringing out. It's like $4.99 a month, super cheap. And they got all the games in HD, and they're putting some on cable. And, you know, I didn't watch any games, actually, except for the Milan-Napoli game so far this season. And I thought the coverage was fantastic. What was your thoughts?
It was beautiful. And, you know, BN Sports was absolutely terrible. Their games were starting late. They would cut out. When you streamed them online, I don't know what happened for you, but I would watch it for 15 minutes. Then it would say stream unavailable. So you had to refresh it, and then you'd miss a minute of the game. But, man, I am happy giving ESPN $5 every month to watch HD Milan play. I am also an EPL fan, but, you know, Serie A is my favorite league. Opening weekend, I'm pretty sure I watched every game that was on. I was just so ecstatic. Best thing about ESPN Plus is you can have 4 games up at once. And I'm pretty sure I sent you guys all a picture of me watching all 4 games, and I was just laying in bed with a huge smile on my face. I was the happiest person on the planet, I think. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
I didn't know you could watch 4 games at once. You'll have to show me how to do that. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean,
you got an Apple TV now, so, you know,
yeah, you can do it. I did. So for the listeners, I had a bit of a meltdown Saturday morning. So I took a new job, and that's why we kind of went on a hiatus from the podcast last season. But I'm working overnights now, and I got off work maybe two hours before the game was going to start, 3 hours or so. And I was like, okay, well, I was going to put it on the ESPN Plus app that is on Xbox. Well, the Xbox app doesn't have access to ESPN Plus, so I was kind of frantically scrambling for it. I didn't know how I was going to get it because I had people coming over, and I wasn't going to watch it on my phone screen. So you and I were discussing Apple TV. That's what you use it on. Mm-hmm. And I went to purchase one. They didn't have any of the regular ones available. They only had the 4K version, which was a $200 purchase, but happy to fork it over now. I mean, that device in itself is pretty cool. But just having that on the big screen, I bought a huge 65-inch 4K TV. The games aren't broadcast in 4K yet. I know that there is talk of that happening later on in the season, or maybe even next season they'll start it up, but they're definitely planning on bringing in the 4K. But yeah, it looked beautiful. The commentators knew what the hell they were talking about. That's something that's been lacking on BN Sports for so long.
Yeah.
They pronounce names wrong, but that's okay. So do we.
I do all the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It comes with being an American. We don't pronounce names correctly, I guess.
And I know one of the big reasons why United States media did not pick up Serie A for so long was because the stadiums look empty. And for, you know, American listeners out there who don't know, in Italy, a lot of the fans are in the end sections or in the upper bowl, which is something that I learned. And I don't know why they sit up there. Maybe the view's better. Here in the United States, the closer you are, the more expensive your seats are. And so they were scared that people weren't going to watch the games because they thought that no one was there. So thank you, Cristiano, for bringing highlight to Italian soccer again. and getting us ESPN broadcasting rights.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point you bring up with the stadiums, specifically with Napoli's stadium. It's a massive stadium, but it's got an upper level and a lower level. And if you watch the games, like you said, it looks like it's just empty because no one sits in these lower level seats in Italy. Even though there were still 55,000 people in the stadium, you didn't see a single one of them when you were watching the game because this lower section is so empty. And with their stadium specifically, the upper level comes out so much more that if you actually have a lower level seat, your view is worse than if you're higher up, which to us in the United States makes no sense because if you look at all of our college football stadiums or NFL stadiums, they just build them straight up, like Mile High Stadium for the Denver Broncos. Every seat is just straight on the field, so you could see everything from everywhere. So obviously you want to be closer to the action, but yeah, in Italian football, they do it weird. You could probably think Mussolini for these monster-sized stadiums that just aren't getting filled, but there definitely were 50,000 fans there on Saturday screaming. You could hear it all. You just couldn't see them, but they definitely fill those stadiums.
Yeah, something crazy about Napoli's stadium. I'm happy that you brought that up. So I'm a regular listener to Sirius XM FC, and Charlie Stilitano, who brings the soccer teams to the United States in the summertime, is a host. And they were talking about the Napoli's stadium. And one of the reasons that those sections are empty is because the owner of Napoli, the city's not selling him the stadium. So he's refusing to put money into it to repair it. And so those sections are dangerous for people to be in.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I remember this summer, he even said that he didn't think the stadium was going to be open in time for the season. Obviously it was, but yeah, I remember that conversation. Very interesting stuff going on there. Another insight to the weirdness of Italian football in general. That's kind of a situation that we have with the San Siro, being that it's owned by the city of Milano, not by AC Milan or Inter Milan. And that's another thing why no one wants to put money into it, because neither club wants to help the other club have a better stadium. Because they just can't agree to help each other. So we're all kind of suffering because of it. And I know each team has had talks of either buying the stadium outright or building a new one. So far, neither's happened. No one's moved forward with anything. But yeah, it's something that's pretty common. You know, we have a lot of teams in Italy that share stadiums. You look at Inter and Milan, Chievo, Verona, and regular Verona, as well as Lazio and Roma all share stadiums, and a few other smaller teams. There's a few more I can't think of. Genoa and Sampdoria share a stadium as well. So it's pretty common here, or not here, but in Italy, whereas elsewhere, nobody does that. You know, you can't imagine having Tottenham and Arsenal share a stadium. That would just be unheard of.
That would be insane. I mean, I'm an Everton supporter as well. I could not imagine Everton sharing a stadium with Liverpool.
Yeah,
that would just be insane.
It would never happen. And I think that also is kind of why Italian clubs, even though the rivalry is there so massively for the fans, between the actual team managements, they're all friendly. Like, you would never see a guy like Leonardo Bonucci go from Juve to Milan to Juve in two seasons anywhere else. Yeah. You know, it's something that we were able to work out because all clubs are close in Italy. Whereas overseas, it's like, oh, you want this player? Well, because you're this team, we're going to charge you three times the price. It's very interesting the way Italian football works. It's one of the reasons why I love it so much. But there's definitely a lot of interesting stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, Italian business is just an interesting business overall, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as we come to kind of the close here, the winding down stage, we're at about 45 minutes into this pod. Were there any other topics you want to discuss before we leave here?
None that come to my mind. I'm kind of disappointed I'm going to be working during the Roma game, but I'll still be able to follow along.
Yeah, it is at an interesting time. It's on a Friday, which is rare. Luckily enough for me, I won't be working during this one, but most of the time I would be. Actually, the five games after that I'm going to be working for, so that'll be a little rough, but I'll watch them.
One thing I did notice, no Milan game starts before, for me, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Before, I would have to wake up at 6 a.m. to watch the Derby. Granted, some of that can still change depending on Europa League and how either team does in their other competitions. But I'm pretty excited for that as well. No 6 a.m. games this season. I know you're a little bit farther behind, so you have to wake up at 6 a.m. multiple times.
Yeah, most of the season takes place at 6 a.m. for me. But honestly, that's still nice, because like you said, you used to have to wake up at 6 a.m. For me, that was 3 a.m.
Yeah,
and
true.
That was, like, both Benevento games that we got fucked on, that was up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I never was fun for that. If I woke up at 3 a.m. against a relegation side, I knew we were losing, and I knew I was going back to bed pissed off. And I don't think I'm going to have to do that this year, thankfully.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But yeah, going forward, most games, 6, 7 a.m., that's pretty cool. A couple noon games, like you said, all that is tentative and can change, probably will change.
Yep.
We do have the Europa League draw on the 31st for the group stage. I don't know all the teams in Europa League off the top of my head. I wouldn't expect anyone to know so, because most of them are obscure. But who would be your ideal group?
Oh, man, I have to look up who's in it.
That's why I asked you first. let's see here. Yeah, I really, gosh, I don't remember everyone who's going to be in it either as far as that goes. But I would like to avoid the top teams, obviously. I know as far as Europa goes, it really doesn't make a difference until the round of 16 when the Champions League teams drop in, and those tend to be the favorites, the big dogs. But as far as right now, I think we might be favorites to win it again. I know last season we were up until that happened, and then Arsenal and Atletico came in and kind of ruined everything. But off the top of my head, I know Sevilla's in it. That's a biggish team. Bastika's, Zenit.
I want to avoid Chelsea and Arsenal. Although I will be in England the week after they play, so maybe if we get one of them in the knockout round and they have to postpone the game, I could go watch them play in Europa League. That's extremely unlikely, but one can hope.
I totally forgot Chelsea was in it. They're probably the favorites to win it all. Definitely, yeah, they have to be.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty bad last season. I mean, Marseille's going to be good. Sporting from Portugal, I mean, they're Portuguese team, so they're not, you know, a giant team, but they're still, I mean, those guys can fight, so.
Yeah, definitely, that's a solid team. Malmo's in it, Ludogorets, so there are some decent teams in there, but yeah, as far as, like, the big ones, I think you're right, Arsenal, Chelsea, and Milan, really, those are the big, big names mm-hmm. right now. Well, hopefully we can avoid them. I think we will. I don't remember how the seeding works for Europa League, but I feel like we can't get Chelsea in the group stage. I could
we
be
are
wrong
in the
here.
Second pot. We were first pot last year. We're second pot this year. I do know that.
Okay. And I think Chelsea is first pot, so we could play Chelsea
yeah,
then?
We could play Villarreal, Real Betis, Frankfurt, Bayern Leverkusen, Chelsea, Arsenal, Lazio. Well, we can't play Lazio. Teams that we will avoid are Marseille, Rennes from France. I'm totally pronouncing that wrong. Krasnodar from Russia, Sporting, some team from Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Anderlecht.
Okay.
So we won't play any of them, but.
So yeah, we could have a tough group stage right out the gate. Jeez. Well, we wouldn't get both Arsenal and Chelsea. We'd get one or the other. Hopefully neither. But yeah, that could be tough. It'll be interesting to see.
If you had to choose one, who do you choose?
Arsenal. I pick Arsenal. I want revenge against them for last season. Last season, I firmly believe that we were a better team, and we just got screwed by the referee decisioning there. I really think we were a much better team last season. I still believe that. I'm also kind of a Tottenham guy, so I hate Arsenal with all my heart. You would think I would hate Chelsea, but I have a lot of good friends that are Chelsea fans, so it's just kind of grown on me.
Yeah, Henrik Mkhitaryan's my boy, but I hope if we play them, we slaughter them.
Yeah, definitely. I was all in for Aubameyang last season, and then all of a sudden I became his biggest hater because of his move to Arsenal. So I hear you there. all right, well, I think that is a good amount of time for today. I have been your host. Thank you guys so much for listening. Anthony Torgrud, and you can follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And Madison, go ahead and plug yourself there.
Yeah, man, thanks for letting me join you guys, or you. It was definitely a joy to be here, my first podcast. So you guys can feel free to follow me at Madison_DT.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Do not forget to download our app, the SempreMilan.com app, as well as visit our sponsor, Euro Fantasy League. They do all of fantasy sports, fantasy Serie A. We have a league. Check us out. I believe Madison's actually winning it right now. So check it out. It's all in good fun. And enjoy the rest of your guys' day. Until next time.